Chapter 20. The shop marked Solomon Brandy Antiquities was situated on a quiet side street in Jerusalem's old city, not far from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Like the 74 other licensed dealers in the country, Brandy was officially sanctioned by the State of Israel to sell and trade in antiquities, providing that the artifacts at hand were not stolen goods. The legal stipulation was a minor impediment to most dealers, who simply reused legitimate tracking identification numbers to sell nebulous items that came in the back door. Israel's antiquities laws, strangely enough, created a huge demand in Holy Land relics and forgeries by allowing the legal trade of artifacts, a practice banned by most other nations. Antiquities were often actually smuggled into Israel from neighboring countries, where they could be legitimized and sold to other dealers and collectors around the world. Sophie Elkin stepped into Brandy's well-lit shop, cringing at the sound of a loud buzzer that activated with the opening door. The small interior was empty of people, but crammed with artifacts that overflowed from glass cases fronting all four walls. She moved to a center island case filled with small clay pots tagged with the label Jericho. Sophie's trained eye could tell that they were all forgeries, which would soon be treasured heirlooms for unknowing tourists making their once-in-a-lifetime pilgrimage to the Holy Land. A stumpy man with pancake eyes emerged from the back room, wearing a dusty apron over rumpled clothes. He set a small clay figurine down on the counter, then looked up at Sophie with unease.
"Miss Elkin, what a surprise," he said in a flat tone that indicated her appearance was not quite welcomed.
"Hello, Sol," Sophie replied. "No tourists in yet?"
"It's still early. They see the sights in the morning, then shop in the afternoon."
"We need to talk."
"My license is current. I've filed my reporting in a timely manner," he protested.
Sophie shook her head. "What can you tell me about the theft and shootings at Caesarea?"
Brandy visibly relaxed, then shook his head.
"A sad tragedy. One of your men was killed. Thomas Raban."
"Yes, I remember him. Very loud and vociferous. He threatened to wrap a shovel around my neck once, as I recall," he said with a smirk.
Sophie had caught Brandy in a sting operation 2 years earlier, accepting a large quantity of artifacts stolen from Masada. She'd dropped the charges when he agreed to secretly cooperate with the prosecution of the actual artifact thieves. But the antiquities agent used the old case to occasionally press him for information on other field investigations. Brandy would usually evade most of her inquiries, but in all her dealings with him, he had never outright lied to her.
"I want the man who killed him," Sophie said.
Brandy shrugged his shoulders.
"I'm afraid I can't help you."
"You hear things, Solomon. Was it the mules?"
Brandy gazed nervously toward the window, looking for any lingering strangers.
"They are a dangerous organization, the mules. Terrorists operating within our own borders. You don't want to get too close to them, Miss Elkin."
"Were they responsible?"
Brandy looked her in the eye.
"There are suspicions," he said in a low voice, "but I cannot say with certainty any more than you can. I know of no others who steal artifacts at the point of a gun and are not afraid to pull the trigger."
"Nor do I," Brandy admitted,
"at least not in our country.
Tell me, Solomon, who would have hired such a team?"
"Certainly not a dealer," he spat indignantly. "I don't have to tell you how things work in the black market. The preponderance of illegal excavating is done by dirt-poor Arabs who are paid a pittance for their discoveries. The artifacts are then passed through a series of middlemen, sometimes dealers, sometimes not, until finding a home with a public or private collector. But I can tell you that no dealer in Israel is going to jeopardize his livelihood by purchasing artifacts with blood on them. There's just too much risk."
Though Sophie had few doubts that half the artifacts in Brandy's store were acquired from illegal excavations, she knew that he was right.
The quality of the best dealers' inventories was based on secret, shadowy deal-making that entailed trust by both parties. There was too much potential exposure to trade with the wrong elements. Killing for artifacts just seemed far beyond the realm for the dealers that Sophie knew. "I believe that no smart dealer would knowingly involve himself with such butchers," she said. "Have you heard of any attempts to sell Roman papyrus scrolls from the 4th century?" "So, that is what they stole from Caesarea," he replied with a comprehending nod. "No, I am not aware of any effort to pawn such articles." "If the goods are not on the market, then it must have been a job for a private collector." "That's how I would see it," Brandy agreed. Sophie stepped to the counter and picked up the small clay figurine. It was in the crude shape of an ox with a gilded yoke. She studied the shape and design closely. "First temple period?" she asked. "You have a keen eye," he replied. "Who's it for?" Brandy stammered a bit. "A banker in Haifa. He specializes in early Israelite earthenware. He has a small but quite impressive collection, actually." "Any papyrus scrolls in his possession?" "No, not his area of interest. He's more of a hobbyist than a dire fanatic. The few collectors I know that are into papyrus are focused on particular texts or content. None are what you'd call a high roller." "Then tell me, Saul, who would be passionate about these scrolls and also have the means to go to this extreme?" Brandy gazed at the ceiling in thought. "Who's to say? I know wealthy collectors in Europe and the U.S. who are willing to go to great lengths to acquire a specific artifact. But there are certainly dozens of other collectors in the same league that I've never even heard of." "Knowledge of the Caesarea scrolls was but a day old," Sophie said. "It doesn't seem likely to me that a Western collector could have responded so quickly." "No, Solomon, I think that this was instigated by a regional source. Any local names fit the profile?" Brandy shrugged and shook his head. Sophie expected little else. She knew that the high-dollar collectors were the gravy train for dealers like Brandy. He probably had no clue who was behind the Caesarea attack, but he certainly wasn't going to raise suspicions about any of his major clients. "If you hear anything, anything at all, you let me know," she said. She started to leave, then turned and faced him with an admonishing glare. "When I find these murderers, and I will, I won't treat kindly any accomplices, whether it's by act or knowledge," she stated. "You have my word, Miss Elkin," Brandy replied impassively. The buzzer sounded as the front door was opened, and a lean man with a stiff, upright posture walked in. He had a square, handsome face, sandy, combed-back hair, and roving blue eyes that glistened in recognition of Sophie. Dressed in worn khakis and a Panama hat, he cut a dashing figure laced with just a hint of snake oil. "Well, if it isn't the lovely Sophie Elkin," he said with an upper-crust British accent. "Is the Antiquities Authority here to expand its biblical artifact collection beyond those acquired by confiscation?" "Hello, Ridley," she replied coolly. "And no, the Antiquities Authority is not in the artifact collection business. We prefer that they remain where they are, in proper cultural context." She glided over to the case of Jericho pots. "I'm just here to admire Mr. Brandy's latest batch of forgeries. Something you should know a thing or two about." It was a stinging rebuke to Ridley Bannister. A classically trained archaeologist from Oxford, he had become a high-profile authority on biblical history in print and on television. Though many of his fellow archaeologists viewed him as a showman rather than an academic, no one denied that he had a remarkable understanding of the region's history. On top of that, he seemed perpetually blessed with good luck. His peers marveled at his uncanny ability to produce exciting discoveries from even the most obscure digs, locating royal graves, important stone carvings, and dazzling jewelry from overlooked sites. Equally savvy at promotion, he exploited book and film deals on his discoveries to attain a comfortable wealth. His luck had run thin, however, when an underling brought him a small stone slab with an Aramaic inscription that dated to 1000 BC. Bannister authenticated the marker as a possible cornerstone from Solomon's temple, never suspecting that the carved stone was a forgery designed to earn the digger a fat bonus. Bannister took the fall, however, in a crushing embarrassment that his professional colleagues happily fostered. His reputation tainted, he quickly fell out of the limelight and soon found himself working limited excavations and even hosting guided tourist trips through the Holy Land. Sophie, you know as well as I that Solomon here is the most reputable antiquities dealer in all of Israel, he said, redirecting the conversation. Sophie rolled her eyes. Be that as it may, it's probably not a wise move for a reputable archaeologist to be seen hanging around a dealer's shop, she said, then stepped toward the door. Ditto, Miss Elkin. It was lovely seeing you again. Let's do have a drink together sometime. Sophie gave him an icy smile, then turned and walked out of the shop. Bannister watched her through the window as she made her way down the street. A beautiful lass, he muttered. I've always wanted to cultivate that relationship. That one, Brandy said, shaking his head. She'd sooner throw you behind bars. She might be worth the trip, Bannister agreed with a laugh. What was she doing here? Investigating the theft and shooting at Caesarea. An ugly incident indeed. He looked at Brandy closely. You didn't have anything to do with that, did you? Of course not, he replied, angry that Bannister would even insinuate his involvement. Do you know what was stolen? Elkin mentioned some papyrus scrolls, 4th century Roman. The description seized Bannister's attention, but he fought to maintain a disinterested demeanor. Any idea of their content? Brandy shook his head. No. I can't imagine they'd contain anything astounding from that time period. You're probably right. I wonder who financed the theft. Now you are starting to sound like Miss Elkin, Brandy said. I really haven't heard anything about it. Maybe you should ask the fat man. Ah, yes, the very reason for my visit. You received the amulets from my associate, Josh. Yes, with a message that I was to hold them until we talked. Brandy stepped to the back room, then returned with a small box. He opened it up and laid out two green stone pendants, each featuring a carved ram motif. A nice matched pair of amulets from the Canaanite period, Brandy said. Did these come from Tel Arad? Yes. A former student of mine is leading a dig there for an American university. That boy could get himself into trouble for looting an antiquities dig. He's quite aware of that, but it's an exceptional case. The boy is actually straight as an arrow. He inadvertently trenched into a gravesite and came away with some sterling artifacts. They actually dug up 4 identical amulets. One went to the university and one was donated to the Israel Museum. Josh sent me the other 2 as gifts for helping him in his career over the years. Brandy raised his brow while asking, You want me to sell them? Bannister smiled. No, my friend. While I realize they would garner a pretty penny, I don't really need the cash. Take one for yourself and do with it what you wish. Brandy's eyes lit up. That is a very generous gift. You've been a valuable friend over the years, and I may need your help in the future. Take it with my blessings. Shalom, my friend, Brandy replied, shaking Bannister's hand. May I ask what you are going to do with the other amulet? Bannister scooped it up and eyeballed it for a second, then slipped it into his pocket as he headed toward the door. I'm taking it to the fat man, he said. Wise idea, Brandy replied. He'll pay you top dollar for it. Bannister waved goodbye and stepped into the street, smiling to himself. He was banking that the fat man would pay him for the amulet, all right. but in something much more valuable than cash.